Okay, we missed Ray's good story, but okay, here we are. It's chapter 18. It is July, what is today?
15th, I think.
15th, 2018. Yep. Okay. So, yeah.
So Ray was talking about how his parents like had to get married. I know you can't see the quotations. And when he was 30, his dad announced that he was leaving his mom. He had actually found his true love.
Yeah.
And just the repercussions that we're talking about, how middle-aged divorce has become more and more common.
Yeah.
And people do. People, society makes it, well, and he talks about the farce about romance, you know, to be in love. And the Eastern part of the world thinks we're nuts because they still do arranged marriages. And, of course, there's a lot about that, but they just think it's funny that we base everything on that feeling.
We volunteered to do that for the girls, but
We did.
They were not interested at all. Yeah, so.
Well, I'm thinking of your generation there, Ray, what you said about your parents. Well, I know my husband's parents, somewhere when he was just in high school, apparently they decided to get divorced also, and again it was the carpool, somebody at Fairchild, and so therefore that was more desirable than the wife back home and so forth. And but that ended up with, if I remember right, he ended up going into the service, enlisting with his dad's signature pretty early. Because he saw all this disturbance coming, and he's one of five children. Mm. And anyhow, he got out of it just because it was a turmoil.
Mm-hmm.
And then he also found, I mean, I observed that as I knew him after service, there were four different divorces from that same father.
Whoa.
In other words, I never knew his family.
Right.
I knew him, but I never knew, I mean, I knew them just by name and, oh, there goes dad or something like that. But it was never a tie of this sort. It just kind of revolved.
Mm.
And I thought that was so strange because I didn't have any divorces in my aunt's uncle's parents, which was a blessing, but nevertheless. And then thinking about one of the things that somebody just said, and I thought about, yeah, the romantic part, but to me, marriage was so much better year after year after year in the later years because it was a stability. There was something stable, something dependable.
And like an old pair of slippers.
Yes. Oh, come on.
When Doug is married a couple, we have him over for dinner. It's ask us anything night. And a bride one time said, no, seriously, is it really better? Because, of course, they're in the flush of, you know, first love. Is it really better? And I said, it's warm. It's comfortable. Oh. And my husband goes, I sound like an old pair of slippers.
There's a reason those slippers aren't thrown out.
That's right.
Hey, I'll put them on anyway.
Absolutely.
They do stink, right?
Yeah.
Well, these are better than, go ahead.
How did that affect Bill in your marriage? Was he determined?
He came out of the service and had no home to go to, and very young still, 4 years. And then he decided he's going to get his GED because he says, I'm not going. So he involved in some education and tried to get jobs. And then he ended up at the hospital for his long-term employment and so forth. But as far as he was the most solid, stable, spiritual leader in our household.
He chose to be different.
I don't know this is the irony of it. His parents were the founders, part of the founding fathers of the Hagerstown Bible Church.
Wow.
When it was the First Churches of God or something like that, you know. And so, I mean, they were all, and all the children had to be lined up every Sunday in those church pews and so forth. But again, the carpooling with this special young lady that they worked together for a child, et cetera, et cetera. And it just looked better than the ragged housewife. Excuse me.
No, but, I know what you're saying.
Sure.
The old saying, grass is green on the other side. It's not really. Once you get over there.
Well, at least
ironically enough, the mother also was married three different times that I can think of.
Wow.
So I never got to know in-laws,
right,
and family picnics and gatherings, I think.
Are we coming?
No, he's
good. Yeah. I did talk about multiple marriages. Did a funeral actually one time for a family from West Virginia, and they actually took this. I thought, should I try this? Yeah, they actually took it as a sign of kind of pride. I said, you guys don't have a family tree, you have a family bush. You're kind of classic West Virginia. And they divorced and remarried so many different times, so many different ones. But at least we're not like the spider, if you read the chapter.
No, yeah.
Yeah. The bride concludes her nuptials by eating the groom.
I think praying mantises do that, too.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yep. So,
well, hold on. What's so interesting in our society is Mike Pence has come under fire, the vice president. Mm-hmm. He refuses to ride in a car alone with a woman. And believe it or not, can you imagine that? And believe it or not, liberals are having a heart attack. They're trying desperately to find something wrong with a man that cherishes his wife that much.
That's what Zig Ziglar's philosophy was.
Yeah.
Who?
Zig Ziglar, who's a pastor speaker.
Pastor motivational speaker.
Yeah, but he's coming under fire.
Yeah. Well, I was going to take Julia and Autumn home the one day, and they were fighting over who's in the front seat. I said, neither of you are in the front seat. You're both in the back seat. Okay. Two of the teenage girls. Yeah. So, and there's times, if I end up I would take Julie home first, and then we would call and say, okay, we're leaving the church, so you know exactly how much time, and now we're leaving. But yeah, they're always in the back seat,
always.
And we call parents, and they've already asked, so.
Well, and he's right, Satan makes fun of that, and that's what he's talking about, to give that illusion that this is exciting, that this is,
So here's my big reveal. So I have something to reveal.
Do you want to know what it is?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I like watching The Bachelorette.
That's the big reveal.
I thought I was going to be with you at dinner with that other woman.
And you thought you were going to get something good out of that.
Well, that is a good story.
Now,
too,
if he gives you a rose every time, that'd be nice.
I got kitchen curtains.
So we can come to that story in a minute. But it fascinates me. It really is fascinating.
I don't even watch it. He'll wake me up to tell me what happened.
Yeah, what society view. So the big thing this year is one of the guys was a virgin.
Oh, no.
Yeah, he was a virgin, and he's a former pro football player.
Oh, sure he was. He was beautiful, baby.
Actually, I think he may have been. He's just really an upright, clean-cut guy, and he said, I focused on that.
What's he doing
on the
show?
Is Tim Tebow on that?
He can't imagine anyone else.
That's why I don't buy it. It's totally out of character. A true believing Christian who has those real convictions, who's just a genuine, guy trying to do right by the Lord. What is he doing on that show?
Oh, he's not a believer.
Oh yeah, he's not a believer.
Oh, okay.
Now there was one. He's kind of the classic one. The same thing. But at the end of the show, if you haven't seen, we're not going to spend much time on The Bachelorette or The Bachelor. But when you get down to three, they all have the option to go to the fantasy suite. And the idea is you have to try it out before you know if, and they said this week, are you physically compatible? I'm thinking, well, God took care of that at creation. Mm. But there's one several seasons ago. He ended up marrying the lady, but they sat out in front of the cameras the whole evening, and they just kind of chatted, and so they when he finally picked his one, they're both virgins. They now have two or three kids, but whether his story is right or not, the point was they made a huge deal in the house. You've got to tell her. This is so unusual. You've got to tell her. So he tells her on their one date, she walked away. Said, I just really have to process this. I don't know if this is a deal breaker. So she walks away for like 15 minutes because he's made this big revelation. And then she comes back and they're talking. He said, it's not a religious, it's not a till marriage thing. It's I just haven't found the right person. And so that was okay.
So he's a manic character. He's not going to just sleep with somebody, and she's just not sure.
Yeah, just not sure. I just thought, yeah, so that seemed to fit in here. So that's my big disclosure.
Well, along with that, maybe I mentioned this before, that a friend locally was just married, we'll say about May, June, and they never so much as held hands. Before the wedding day, because they said no, this contact and so forth, and they are both deeply Christian people, but not until even the wedding day. And then she was very concerned about the kiss when the pastor says, "You may now kiss the bride," and so he pulls out a fan and puts it in front of them, for the congregation. Okay. But that was purity today.
Yeah,
which
is really mocked, continually mocked.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So yeah, in the chapter he's just talking about how Satan tries to really scramble what God's plan was. So other comments that you saw in there.
I hate to say it, but it seems like he's doing a good job of.
Oh, he is.
Yeah.
Oh, he is.
Yeah, it's hard for me to think of weddings I've done with two virgins. Mm-hmm. It's just few and far between. Normally, we have
are you saying ever in your life, or do you mean today?
Oh, in the last 15, maybe two, 15 weddings, maybe two. Okay. Most of them have one or two kids. So it's just society has taken a certain view on what qualifies as grounds for divorce. That has drastically changed.
Years ago, my mother-in-law, when she got divorced, she was actually shunned. This was back in the 60s. I mean, she moved into a house. Her parents got her a house for her. And one winter, she went out and was... This guy in the neighborhood shoveled everybody's driveway because he had a plow or something back then. He missed her as well. And there was a little stuff like that in the neighborhood that was done to her.
That's not
she was
completely
divorced.
Out of the realm of today, though.
What?
That's not completely out of the realm of today.
You don't think
so? I had one. My best friend got divorced in her family, and her brother will not let her see his kids.
Wow.
Will not. That's she has two brothers.
Really?
Eight nieces and nephews, and she's not allowed to see them.
She's not allowed to see his kids. Her brother's kids.
Because she'll be a bad influence.
He finally, and she got divorced because there was a lot of abuse. Mm. So, there was a lot of stuff. And, like, she's told him, but he just doesn't want to hear that.
Mm. Wow.
So that's not completely out of the realm today.
Wow.
There's still
some
of that.
I just came from helping a little church with their daily vacation Bible school. The children were so difficult, and I'm very firm, were so difficult, the law had to be called.
Wow.
Now, that to me is extreme.
Wow.
It's located close to, like, I'll call it a matchbox city, but I meant an area that is difficult areas.
Nolan Village, just say it.
As long as they all felt good about themselves.
I'm sorry.
I said as long as they all felt good about themselves.
Yeah. Yeah.
Their self-esteem was elevated.
But that's interesting because that fits in because that Satan is telling everybody you have to feel a certain way to know if it's right. And we have an entire generation of kids who as long as they feel okay, it must be right.
Yeah.
Well, and all I kept hearing from the staff, but we got to love it. We got to love it. Doesn't matter if they're walking up over the
No, that's the biggest mistake Christians make.
Stop that, excuse
biggest
me.
Biggest mistake Christians make.
But just, it was chaos and rude and almost violent. But we got to love it.
No, we've definitely asked kids to not come back. And Jim's done that with the new thing. Okay, you're just not welcome back for the next 2 weeks.
Yeah,
love needs to be firm.
Okay.
Love needs to be firm.
Yeah.
Oh, love needs to be firm. A man who does not love his children does not discipline him, is what Scripture says.
The attitude of the young generation.
Yes.
Well, the issue of safety, Right. You have the safety of the other kids you have to
right.
keep in
yes.
mind. And kids who really do want to learn.
Yes.
And you can't
yes,
jeopardize
because
that.
You can see the spark. I guess I know enough to see children learning. That their little eyes light up. They want to learn, you know, yeah. and it's a joy.
You can't hold those kids hostage. But see how this trickles down. Satan starts
That's
this marriage right. You only have to stay married if you're like on this thrill. And it trickles down to this generation. If you're not happy, then something's wrong.
Well, and I just, like I said, I don't know the children personally, and I just don't know any of their backgrounds, whether it's just
We had it here for a while. Kids who had never been to church came in and climbed. We ran that van ministry. Climbed on the pews. They had never been in a church building.
Mm-hmm.
And so, yeah.
This notion of feelings... we use that in church, and we'll use it within context, right in the same conversation where we're condemning the use of feelings as the litmus test of whether something is scriptural or spiritual.
Mm-hmm.
And we will do that.
Yes.
Christians, pastors, church leaders, because you have this almighty phrase that, well, I have peace in my heart about it.
Right.
You know, I pray to the Lord about, you know, which way to go, what to do, or this decision, and I have peace about it, so we're good. It's like, since when do you having peace, when is that a good indicator of whether something is God's will? Now, granted, I mean, if you're in turmoil about something, your conscience is bothering you about something, but we're not talking about conscience. We're talking about this idea of having peace over something. It makes it, you know, good, or that's the final decision, or that's how we know. I'm like, since when have our emotions
sinful emotions?
Yeah. Well, we're fallen people, and since when have emotions been a good indicator of anything as far as being a reliable source? When have your emotions ever been a reliable source of information? But we do that. I have peace. We had a discussion, okay, way back in the day, as far as computers, we were on a local computer bulletin board, a BBS system.
Internet, man, it's just a fad.
So we were on this BBS, and one of the forums, there was a lady, it was a Christian BBS, and one of the discussions was going, there was a Mormon woman, a very, very nice lady.
I know what she's going to say. Go ahead.
Very spiritual, very kind, moral person. And we were all, there was this discussion going on, and nobody realized that she was Mormon because everything was very moral, and she had some good points to make. Until it came out the whole Mormon thing, and it was like, okay, wait a minute. Suddenly, the context of the conversation shifted, and I think people kind of jumped too much to try to explain the error of her ways. So she got a little defensive, and came down to, you know, I have peace in my... I prayed about
burning
this.
Burning in my bosom, they said.
Yeah.
I have a burning
and
in my bosom.
She didn't use that. I think she specifically didn't use that.
Probably, because that's a big Mormon catchphrase.
Right. But she said that she had read the scripture, she prayed about it, she had peace in her heart about it. That's how she knew it was true. And I'm like, people can have peace in their heart doing some horrific
James Dobson wrote a great book, Emotions, Can You Trust Them?
Mm-hmm.
It was a good book.
And I'm like, so it's the whole thing. It's like I can kill somebody and be at peace about it.
Mm. Oh, yeah.
I can.
Psychopath?
Yeah. I can do horrible things.
Yeah.
And it's conditioning. You don't even need to be a psychopath. You just need to, you know, believe your own hype or tell yourself something long enough. Everything becomes true. Well, that's a great justification.
Mm-hmm.
I did not only, you know, have peace in my heart about it, I actually feel kind of good because I'm vindicated now. And we can get real self-righteous. So for crying out loud, using those emotions, I have peace about it.
Yeah.
And we do that in the church, and that's the Supreme Court of doctrine. I have peace about it. So obviously, you know, it's of the Lord because, you know, I'm a Christian, I'm spiritual. If it was wrong, then I obviously wouldn't have peace about it. And that is so arrogant.
Yeah, I had a good talk with my one nephew. He is in charge of a program in Albuquerque that works with young kids.
Very troubled young kids.
Yeah, very troubled young kids. He said he hates when he's interviewing people to come on his staff. He hates when they say, I feel called of God to do this and I have a piece about it.
Because that's going to change.
He knows 2 weeks later, 2 months later, they're called of God to a different ministry. And the kids can't understand. That was his whole point, is the kids can't understand, is God that fickle? He called you here, and two months later now he called you somewhere else. They see right through it. You don't like us. You can't handle us. He's saying when he's interviewing, if he hears that, he just kind of cringes. Mm-hmm. Because it is emotional.
God called me to do
it. Here, to title this back to the chapter, because it all fits in, that's permanent excitement.
That permanent excitement.
Is permanent excitement. And if you're not then excited about, so today, were you just as excited about your husband, your wife? If not, then the in love has passed, it's gone. And why stay married if you're not in love? So that was the whole point in that same big paragraph that you were talking about.
The trouble is, the older you get, the less excited you are.
It's the old slipper. I like my old slipper.
Doing good. I plan to hang around.
Hey, hi you guys.
Hey, come on in. Pull up some chairs.
Coming closer. Whoops.
Now, you're probably an example of... The opposite of what we were just talking about.
Excitement of young love. We're talking about it. Did you read the chapter?
So we're chapter 18. Yeah. So the point we just made, like I said, you guys are probably the opposite of that.
They're new slippers.
Yeah, they're new slippers. The idea that Satan has duped us into believing that in love means permanent excitement. So if you're not permanently excited, then you're no longer love. If you're not love, why stay married? It's sort of the... But you guys are so young in love that probably still a lot of excitement there. But I'm sure there's days it's like...
Every day.
Every day.
You're throwing up over the toilet and you're like, are we having breakfast?
So, but that is such the definition. Again, going back to my TV show.
Doug admitted he watches The Bachelor.
So it's just the way they pick the people is always how is that person going to meet my needs? Literally on camera almost every episode. Now I sent him home because I didn't feel like he would meet my needs. It's always completely so. I had to follow my heart.
Does the person ever say, can I meet his needs?
Right, never.
No. There's a realization that I might pick somebody and that person might not say yes. But no, there's never that other-sided part of it. It's just fascinating how they define what it takes to be in love, what it means to be in love, the whole, fantasy suite. Of course, nobody turns down the fantasy suite. A few have, but not often. But you've got, how do I know I'm compatible? Well, and we've talked about this before. So 2 weeks later, you're going to propose to somebody knowing she's just slept with two other guys within the last 2 weeks.
It's that's okay. That's more on that in our society. That really is okay. Well, and what I love about this the trickle down. Obsessing over here. It's the trickle down into our society, because then again, it goes down to, if I'm not happy, something's wrong. And I just thought it was...
And the something is somebody else.
Right. You need to meet my needs, right.
Yeah, because you can't own up to your own unhappiness. So, what else from the chapter? We've actually been hitting some of the discussion questions, but any other kind of sentences that you picked up?
Oh, he says, when your feelings fade, the marriage is no longer binding. And who's that couple? I think it's Chris Pratt and Anna Faris. Weren't they the ones that were married? And they had a special needs child, and they the boy almost died, and he's got all kinds of health issues, but they said what pulled them through was prayer. So many people prayed for them. They believe in the power of prayer. It was a wonderful testimony. They just got divorced because they just, you know, it's been a stress, and they just no longer have those feelings. It did break my heart because they really came out and were an incredible testimony for a while.
So the first discussion questions refers to that first major paragraph where Satan focuses on the fact that we only have two options. Although it's an interesting one paragraph in the chapter. The dilemma is complete abstinence or a completely, totally monogamous relationship in marriage. And Lewis says that that's a dilemma. That's a dilemma that Satan uses. Are those the only options? And how is that a dilemma? And how has society kind of played with that duality? The dilemma, according to Lewis, is Satan says you only have two options, complete abstinence or complete monogamous relationship. But that is what we would say. So how is that a dilemma for us?
Well, society does not hold that opinion.
Certainly
the influence of television, the influence of if you don't go to and get a decent Christian book that you're reading and studying and so forth, the novels that are by famous or popular or authors that have a high rating, they're just full of such immoral chapters that it's you don't want to read.
Well, it makes it difficult to find another person with the same values as you in today's free, whatever. It's find somebody else. I thought I married a virgin the first time, found out real quick that was true. And I mean, it just,
even to meet
it was
someone
an emotional
blow.
And then I had to come to grips with that. And then when I got married the second time, I wanted someone else who was divorced who could relate to that. But yeah, it's like I think about my kids, and it's like, well, how are they going to meet? Just prayer.
Yeah.
Pray they do better than we did.
There's some really sharp girls have been connected here, like Elizabeth Draper.
Mm-hmm.
But she is a sharp, sharp gal, and has just never found the right person. You know, so what is the answer for something like that? Yeah, I mean, the search goes on to find the right guy.
I don't think there is a solution nowadays, honestly. I think we've gone so far. I mean, if you read this, like over on page 96, you read down, he very often it seems like the opposite is so true that, okay, I get what he's saying about the idea that, you know, just basically being in puppy love is the ultimate, so obviously we should get married because we feel that way, and when puppy love's gone, we're not in love, so let's get divorced. It's very fickle, it's not reliable, okay, fine, but then very often Christians, in writings anyway, I don't know how many people there are who actually believe it, that the idea of love having anything, or emotions having anything to do with the marriage is to be shunned because it's such an evil thing, it's so dangerous because we have, you know, no control over our emotions whatsoever, that if you get married for any reason other than a contract, you know, for the purpose of, there's one point here, I can't remember exact wording, but it sounds like basically, you know, concerning the whole sex thing, it's like, well, you know, marriage is a solution to that, that you just find somebody who, you know, is willing to sign the other line on the contract, and you're agreeing to be the solution for that person's sexual needs, and that's there's this contract, this binding business agreement that, you know, completely devoid of any emotion whatsoever, you're going to sign this thing and agree to meet certain needs for each other, you know, very business-like, you know, very contractual, and, you know, so we go that far to the point where you look at it, it's like, why would I even want to be involved in that? What's the point? You know, and it's like we refuse to find the balance. It's not that we can't find it. We refuse to find it. It's like, if you're not way far out on one end of the scale or way far out on the other end of the scale, you're not fully committed. It's like, you have to be the extreme. And I just think the whole thing's ridiculous. I don't know where the balance is.
We could have Hollywood and everybody signs a prenup.
Yeah.
Because the assumption is it's not going to last.
Yeah, you're obviously.
So when it doesn't last, right. How are we going to divide everything? So you're
what is
going
the
into it.
Society? If I had a child today, raising children today, I would be very concerned. Where would they find?
God is still in control.
Because there's a lot of parents that don't raise their children, though, so how do children know
good.
What a boundary
because
is?
Because right. yeah. yeah.
you know what I mean? Because
you don't church. Is it taught? Is it? I don't know. I'm sorry.
No, you're fine. You're fine.
But where is the answer? Because you've got it. Well, the
I feel like personally, my parents were divorced, so I didn't have a good basis of married couple.
I think most of us did.
Yeah. So, and I feel like. I went to a Catholic church, so I didn't know anything about Christianity. So for me, a marriage wasn't really, like, it was expected for a woman to stay home. Like, as a Catholic, it was expected to raise children. So I feel like a lot of times expectations on children in different religions or in society is, I feel like women now want to be what a man is. Like a man, mm-hmm. you know what I mean?
I do.
Like, I feel like mm-hmm. there's a lot of women that feel like they don't want to be married because they want to be
In charge.
And also, I just feel that there's not a lot of guidance for young people. Like, I know a couple that if I were to bring them to church or if they would even be interested in coming to church, that a lot of their problems maybe would have been answered. So I feel like they just don't know where to go. I feel like a lot of people just don't know what to do. It's not necessarily about the boundaries, it's about what do I do. Yeah.
Right.
Because society in the world is presenting, that's okay.
Yeah, I ran across that when I was the youth director, youth pastor in Ohio. And we were talking about sexuality and relationships. And one young guy, early teenager, literally had never heard that you weren't supposed to have sex before you married. Never, ever heard that. Uh-huh. I'm going, how can you not? But then I'd start saying parents and, okay, I get it, but... So in his mind, this is like brand new stuff. I'm thinking, yeah, so exactly what you're saying. If you're not raised with any of those kind of guidelines, how do you know?
But the cool thing is, now being aware of it, you will raise your children differently.
Right.
Oh, yeah.
Because I can remember when especially Karen got to, left the house and went to college, and she called and she said, you would not believe how some of these kids have been raised. And I said, yes, I would. That's why we chose to raise you differently. This is not a happy accident.
The norm is the norm. What's normal for you is normal because it's normal. Which sounds like doublespeak, but it's like no. Because when you get around somebody who wasn't raised like you, you're the weirdo. And the way that they live is the most normal thing in the world to them. So, what you're talking about, I can't believe you. It's like, you look at somebody and you're like, you would just be amazed at how these people are raised. It's like, no, not really, because... Mm-hmm. Because that's just the way things are, and they're amazed at how you were raised. So, you know, the norm is the norm because it's the norm. Mm-hmm. Like it's all what we're used to. It's all perspective. Why on earth would you wait till you get married? That's ridiculous.
I feel like a lot of times, and I'm a Christian, so, but, like, I feel like some Christians are judgmental. You know what I mean?
Oh, yeah. Definitely.
And that pushes people farther away, so... you're supposed to be like a light on people. You're supposed to guide people.
Very good.
So if you can't do that, then how are you showing them the right way? Because you're not even going the right way.
That's true. And as Christians, we really struggle with not accepting sin and showing love.
Right.
I feel like we really do. Mm-hmm. Like, I know my kids believe that the church is... overlooks a lot of sin except homosexuality. And their question is always, why the emphasis on homosexuality? Which we always answer, because sex is so much the foundation. And marriage, that from the beginning is such a foundation and a picture of Christ in the church. So I feel like that does have repercussions. I mean, we know a lot of people who are gay. And it's not like we don't love them. But obviously I would never hope one of my children would be. But, so it's interesting. But I know what you're saying. I grew up in a never physical, but a fairly volatile home. Like, one of my favorite, we still joke about this, we're having dinner, and my mother says, I have to take your crap. I've had offers. My father went, I wish to God you'd take one of them. So we're just all like this. You know, just another wonderful, warm family dinner. You know, so for us, I mean, I really wasn't sure. And you know, in the beginning, we had a lot of struggle. They were never major, but just
you knew like, the we bottom didn't even know, line that you
right,
to
we didn't
stay
even
together.
Know how to fight because yeah. I thought it was
nevertheless.
You know that. Uh-huh. And then in Doug's family, they don't fight. Like his mom would just be like, "Dad, come on, be nice." So it took us a while to figure out the balance, but yeah.
The passages that Paul or that Lewis uses and the study guide writer uses pretty classical. So 1 Corinthians 13, you know, it's in almost all weddings. We were just in Ohio for a wedding. Defining what love is. You know, so love is this, love is patient, love is kind, that whole section in there defining what love is. Which leads me to those who've been through any premarital counseling with me know that I have a trick question on my initial questionnaire for everybody, and that is kind of rate 1 to 5. Marriage is a 50-50 proposition. And 1 is absolutely not, 5 is absolutely is, and most, of course, are like 5s all the way across. So I'm saying a 5, I'm guessing that my significant other will say a 5. And to then talk about as absolutely a from the world statement. Love is not 50-50. It did show up on a show that I said I wouldn't mention anymore, so I won't mention it. But it did show up just the other day on that. But yeah, whoops, I'm going, you know, 50-50 with this thing. So I'm going, okay, that is a recipe for disaster. Because I've talked to my sister, and she's allowed me to use this, but I think she went into it with that. With her husband, and then the problem is when, right or wrong, you feel like he isn't putting in his 50, well then I'm only going to put in my 40, and then he senses backing off, and well, if she's not, then I'm going to, and you end up this, nobody's willing to put in anything, because I'm certainly not going to do, if he backs off, I'm not going to do this. Well, that's not fair. If he backs more, I'm not going to do this. That's just not fair, but that's what society says. You pull your weight, I'll pull mine. You don't, I'm not pulling mine either. And you end up 0-0 or 1-1.
Nothing is fair nowadays.
Oh, see, there's that word. There's that word.
Fair.
Fair is the most destructive word in the human language.
You dance.
Fair was in August.
that word.
What was your dance statement on that?
Fair is in August. Get over it.
Oh, yeah.
I love that.
Think about it. What is the very first concept of justice that we ever develop as humans?
Yeah.
Juice. It's juice. He got more juice than I got.
This
sippy cup is fuller than mine. That's not fair. It's juice. It's the sippy cup, or it's the popsicle, or the divide up the candy. God help you if there's one too many M&Ms in that bowl.
Well, I'll take care of
because
that.
Because that's not
you're right.
Fair.
Sure. You're right. You're right.
That's super early.
That godforsaken word, fair, that we hinge everything on society on our perception of fair. The final arbiter of right and wrong is whether or not it's fair. We use that as the ultimate guide or the ultimate measuring stick for everything in a society. Mm. And it's a ridiculous concept, because there's no such thing as fair, because it is one. Fair is a 100% relative term. It is about perception. It's subjective. It is 100% subjective. You just cannot have an objective definition of fair almost in any situation. Is it fair that rich people pay more taxes than poor people? Well, it depends. Do they pay the same percentage of their income? Is that fair as if everybody pays 10%? Or is it fair to say everybody pays the same dollar amount? Which is what depends on your perception. You literally can't define the word fair, but and I think this is the genius of Satan, that he has made this the god of our culture. Fairness. We literally put everything that we do, every law that's paid, everything hinges on whether it's perceived as fair. And you can't even define it. It's completely subjective, because you put 20 people in a room, give them a topic, what's fair? You're going to get 20 different answers. You just can't do it, and that's it. That's our holy grail. That's our God.
Oh, yeah, we're committed to that. Yeah. In one sense, and I agree with what you said, but if we look at salvation, salvation's not fair.
Absolutely
and
not.
I'm really happy for that.
Amen.
Yes, amen. Yeah.
Jesus died. I had to pray. I believed he had to die.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so salvation is not fair at all from that perspective.
Well, my definition of fair would be selfishness. I want what I want. I want
I deserve,
more than you got.
I deserve.
I want
what comes
to me. I want the
whole
thing. It's
my selfish nature.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, if not more than the other person, at least the same as the other person.
Right, correct. I deserve. Correct.
Because then if it's not, then it's some statement about who I am, my character, mm-hmm. and why am I not. Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, all of that.
Self-gratification.
Oh, and it plays hugely in wedding, in marriages. Yeah.
Well, that relates that back to the 50-50 thing.
Yeah.
You know, 50-50, well, that's fair. Depends on who you ask.
And that completely,
and it doesn't work anyway.
Completely impossible way of defining what 50% is.
Exactly.
Or 40 or 30 or anything. Mm-hmm. Yeah, you can't define that.
That's the convenience of terms like that. It's like, well, that's fair, really. Okay, first of all, you can't define it, so you can't really, you can't look at anything and say, okay, that is defined as fair. It's always a matter of opinion. And so then you get to argue your opinion. I hate that word. I just hate that word.
Any other thoughts from this that Dan's been running over lately? So it's a huge, especially those who still have the ability to influence children, grandchildren, you know, influence people in the church. Just realize, like we said, I mean, sometimes they're coming from such a completely different background. But yeah, extending some grace, like you're saying, just kind of, yeah, okay, they didn't grow up the way I did. They don't know what I know. They don't see. They don't realize that, I mean, God gave all of the directives, and there's lots of them regarding sexuality, for our good, not as a killjoy, not so we can just run and go, well, that's no fun. You have to stay with just one woman. So just realize, you know, in the people that we have, and some of you have young ones anyway, not even asking these questions, but when they do, they're going to get a bizarre listing of answers.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and you have girls that are in this stage or coming into this that...
Yeah, but I'm in denial, so I don't have to deal with it.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Just lock them up in the closet, but no, then we'll see your name in the newspaper. So, yeah. Daughter's locked in closet for 4 years. But, yeah, it's just... And obviously, it's not going to get better. It's just going to continue to get worse. There's going to be continue to be a bigger and bigger divide from those of us that believe what the Scripture says about this and how society interprets that. And with the trend... I'm assuming there'll be some legal things that'll come in that we can't do thus and such and everything else. So far, the church has been protected. I don't have to marry a gay couple. I'm not required to do that. And, you know, but you know, who knows? Given the current state of the slippery slope, and we don't have time to open that up. But the can of worms that was opened that now can never ever be closed, and that is. What you identify as, that'll come into marriage.
Yep,
I'm sure it has already.
Well, there's five
and it's
sexes
going to
now.
Be,
that's what we were told in our diversity class.
Well, I've heard it
huh?
I've heard lists read of over 30.
Yeah, they're just crazy.
They told us there was five sexes.
Yeah. So
genders.
What,
Not genders. Sexes.
You're right.
Yeah, you're right.
So genders.
When I teach my database class and I get to the gender field, I said, there are two. Okay, so you build into your database there are two genders, and they're not going to be able to do that. You're going to have male, female, and other, or a whole list of the changes all the time. But all of that male, stuff female. Is going to impact marriage, it's going to impact relationship, it's going to impact everything, and that they'll never be able to recover from that. I mean, from that open door.
Which I always think, as weird as things are now, Scripture says it will get worse.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
And it just, wow.
It doesn't seem possible how it can get too much worse.
Oh, yeah.
But perception is reality. And we, it's something, well, I used to listen to Rush Limbaugh. He would always say that our view of history basically starts at our birth. We rate and gauge society by what it was like when we got. It's so much worse today than it's ever been. Not since I was born, but than it's ever been. No, it's not.
No.
There are times in society when things were way worse than they are now. We can't believe that. That just seems like an alien concept. Mm-hmm. There were times when life was, and I'm not talking about other places in the world. I mean, we're a new country. Mm-hmm. People today don't realize, you know, how terrible things are. They don't realize the United States of America invented the middle class.
Mm-hmm. That's a good way to put that.
That never existed before.
Yeah, it was poor, rich, and poor.
You were either eating dirt trying to survive, or you were sickeningly wealthy. You either lived in a castle or you lived in the mud. There was nothing in between. So we created that. But to say things have never been worse, and I'm not saying I think things are going to get better. I think we're kind of in the last days, so I think it's a given. But, well, if God doesn't destroy America, he owes Sodom and Gomorrah an apology. No, he doesn't. Most people just have no concept of what things were like in Sodom and Gomorrah. When you read the scripture, Sodom and Gomorrah was bad. And they did very specific things to bring down God's wrath. So, we need to try to remember that the reality that we live in is basically just our perception. That we do tend to gauge history, the history of the world, starting with the events that happened at our childhood. And that's our perception of things. And how, because it's interesting, you'll hear people that are younger than you bring up a subject that they've just discovered, and you're thinking, I remember when I discovered that 30 years earlier. And it's just as valid. And what he's writing today, when he read it, he wrote this back during World War II?
Yeah.
How relevant is what we're reading today?
Especially the next chapter. So this is, we'll have to close. My segue is, the next chapter is letter 21. Unfortunately, Hannah, you and I will miss that. It's a hot topic for you. You get to teach it.
Okay.
Entitlement.
Letter
21. Oh, letter 21. We're going to skip a few.
Okay.
Yeah.
Really, yeah. I got gluttony, I get entitlement. Is he trying to say something?
So skip to letter 21, entitlement, for next Sunday. A couple of us will be coming back from youth conference on that day. So here we go, and...